Sing to me, of heaven, let me fondly dream of its gold.
Welcome to Conversions to Christ. I'm your host, Jeff Smith.
Sing to me when shadows of the evening fall. Sing to me of heaven, sweetest song of all.
My guest today, Ken Williams. I'm just so glad to be able to talk with you. And this is a first for me because this is the 11th one of these that I've done. And you're the first person that I didn't know beforehand, didn't have a personal connection with, didn't know anything about you until in the 8th episode, I was talking with Kerry Keenan. And as he was telling his story about coming to the Lord, you were prominent in that. And he said, oh, you got to talk to Ken.
He's a great guy, all right.
Wow. Isn't he? I'm glad you could join us and share just a little bit of background so you know where we're going, what we're up to today. Conversions to Christ is the name of this series. And we know from the book of Acts, there's a way to come to the Lord. We read about it. You know, people hear the word of God preached and it registers with them. And they are pricked in their hearts. And they're often in those conversion stories, repentance is stated. Sometimes it's just implied. There's confession, sometimes stated, it's always implied, and then they're immersed for the remissions of their sins. They rise to walk in newness of life. There's a way to come to the Lord, and that's standard for us, but the details of individual conversions are so unique and so amazing. You know, how old were you? Who was it that, you know, got through and when in your life, and what do you think was the thing that caused it to happen then? Those kinds of details are what we're mining for today. Tell us a little bit about Ken before you were converted to the Lord.
Well, you know, my conversion is not all that exciting. I grew up with parents who were Christians. You know, my dad is Paul Williams, who preaches in South Africa. You may have heard of him before, long before I can remember. I was going to church. So it's a very different situation for me. I was baptized when I was 11. I got baptized again when I was 18 because I wasn't sure I really knew what I was doing at 11.
That's really interesting. And, you know, I'm glad that your story isn't too exciting. I didn't want this to be, let's find the most unusual conversions and only talk about those, you know, because there are a lot of folks who have a conversion is more of a standard process. But I think this is the first time that we've talked to someone who felt compelled to get baptized again. So 11 and 18?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. For me, the conversion sort of quote was in the things I really learned after I was a Christian. I started out teaching a one lesson personal work type class. And I learned this. There were two men, I won't name them, but they were both in Florida. I guess they'd each come up with this on their own, but it was just one lesson thing you teach. And then, you know, I think one of them might have titled it In the Same Hour of the Night. Hopefully you can get the person converted. And it wasn't until some years later that I really understood just how unscriptural that was. It was a lesson to convert people to the Church of Christ rather than to Christ. It was all about why, where we got all these denominations and why the Church of Christ is where you need to be. And it said practically nothing. I mean, I'm quite serious, practically nothing about Jesus. I was probably 18 when I learned the first one, and maybe the second one too. And these were, you know, senior preachers who were preaching this, very successful, converting lots and lots of people with this lesson. So I was doing this when we had a meeting, and when I was, the very first place I preached full time was in Marshall, Texas. And we were having a meeting with Brother John Witt, who was at the time in Kansas City, Missouri. And he's the one that taught me the series that I used with Kerry Keenan. And it was just such a breath of fresh air. Here was finally, it wasn't just one lesson, but that was okay. It was a number of lessons, but it was finally something that was biblical, that was scriptural, that was leading people to Jesus. It was just wonderful. And I think you mentioned when you were talking with Carrie that there's someone in Alabama that does a one lesson version of it. I forget his name right now.
Yeah, it's a Ken Craig, I think.
Ken Craig. Yeah, I think I went to college with him, in fact.
Okay.
He's been to South Africa several times. My dad knows him real well. I'm pretty sure we're doing much the same lesson. It's just that it takes me longer to do it. Mm-hmm. I don't do it in one lesson. So he taught me that. And it took me a number of years before I actually understood it. You know, I started teaching it to people, but it still took a while. One of the books that was very helpful to me in understanding it was Alfred Edersheim's Old Testament Bible History.
Yes, I have that. It was recommended to me by a fellow that I worked with, Bill Cavender. I worked with him for a while, and he pointed me to Edersheim. And, you know, those works you can now get online for nothing.
You can get it for free. That's right. Yeah. For many years, if someone said, you know, what's the best book in your library, I would have just said, you can have all my books except Alfred Edersheim's Old Testament Bible History. He just did so much for me. It just really helped me understand the relationship between the Old Testament and the New Testament. It was just very, very good. Probably 2-3 years after that, I was preaching in Asheville, North Carolina. And that was really the best work I had ever done. It was actually the last work I did full time. It was just wow. I mean, people love these lessons. I was teaching them. I remember at one point there was 10 different classes I was teaching every week outside of services. And, you know, I was so busy, I had to count on somebody, at least one person needed to cancel that week so I could have a little bit of time to myself. It was just a wonderful, wonderful work.
What years were you there?
Somewhere like 78 or 79 up till about 81.
Okay.
I was there about 3.5 years, and then we moved to Maine. So halfway through that time, we had a baseball player come to our services on a Sunday night, Jay Pettibone. I think the second time he came, I talked with him a little bit more and realized that he couldn't come very often. It was a minor league team, but they'd play on the weekends. You know, that was their best time for playing. So he really couldn't come very often. I said, well, hey, would you like to have a class, a Bible class at your house? He was delighted with that. I don't know if I learned it before this, but he hadn't been a Christian but a few months at this time. He'd been converted by his girlfriend, who by this time was his wife. He was gung-ho about serving the Lord, as I learned as time went on. So I said, you know, I'd be happy to have a study with you during the week, you know, when you've got some time. Oh, that'd be great. Yeah. I said, maybe you'd want to invite some of your friends to it too. He said, yeah, I'll do that. So he came back, I think a week later, he says, well, is there any limit on how many people come to this class? This is the biggest class I'd ever taught of unbelievers, you know, outsiders. It was just, I think we had a dozen people there. In fact, Carrie may have said we had more than that, but it was a lot of people.
Isn't that great? I had that happen just one time as well, when somebody said, can you wait just a couple, can we wait to start this till I get my friends here? And sure enough, you've got 12 or 15 people there at the meeting, you know, okay. Yeah. It's like Cornelius's household, you know, okay, we're all here. Just say what you want to say. And yeah. It's pretty wonderful, isn't it?
It was fantastic. It was just fantastic. Yeah. I gathered up all the Bibles I could find in my house and brought them there to hand out. So these guys that each have a Bible to read while we were having this study. I met all 12 of them, I guess, right off the bat, but Carrie, you know, he kind of stood out in my mind. Of course, he stands out for being like the tallest guy that was there.
6'8".
But he was a very devout Catholic. And the other guys were, there was kind of a mixed group there that various, you know, some of them from various denominations and others. I don't think they went anywhere to church. I learned later, his mother was so devout, she went every day to Mass. Yes. 7 days a week. Carrie wasn't doing that, but I'm pretty sure he was going regularly to Catholic Church all during that summer. That I think it was his first year in the in minor league baseball. So, you know, I announced that we're going to start in Genesis chapter 1. That's what we're going to be studying. We're going to start right at the very beginning, which normally, I get different reactions from people, but most people really like that because most people don't know the Bible. And when I tell them I'm going to start in chapter 1 of the Bible, they're really happy about that because if I start anywhere else, they're going to wonder, well, why did you pick there? You know, what are you leaving out? So, you know, you start at the beginning and then they feel like they're getting the whole story. Well, Carey wasn't real loud about this, but he really wanted to study the book of Revelation and not the book of Genesis.
Oh.
And of course, if there's any book most of the unbelievers want to study, it's going to be Revelation.
Yeah. And as a teacher, if there's any book you don't want to start with, Revelation.
You do not want to start with Revelation.
Right.
Back then, I think the late great Planet Earth was one of the popular books, you know, in the quote Christian, you know, bookshelves. And he may have read that. I don't know. But anyway, he thought that'd be a great book to study.
Oh, man.
But he agreed, we were going to study Genesis. He told me later, it wasn't until we hit Genesis chapter 22 that he really appreciated why we were in Genesis.
Really?
Genesis 22 is where Abraham sacrifices Isaac.
Uh-huh.
Or he would if the angel hadn't stopped him. By this time, we'd already seen there were a number of lots of passages in the Old Testament that relate to the New, but that one was one of those big surprises, because most people that know a little bit about the Bible know about Abraham sacrificing Isaac, but they've never thought about why. What was it about? When we got to that point, I'd let them know, you know, this is really reflecting things in the New Testament. I mean, look at the, you know, we look at the very first verse. Abraham says to Abraham, you know, I want you to take your son, your only son, and sacrifice him. Well, he wasn't his only son. You know, Ishmael was his son too.
True.
So why is he the only son? Well, he was the only son of promise.
Right.
And this is what fits with the New Testament when God has his only son that he sacrifices.
Mm-hmm.
And so once the guys all understood, oh, God's having Abraham act out what he's going to do with his son years later. And of course, it'll be Abraham's son. You know, Jesus was descended from Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
So then they started finding things in the passage. They were surprising me. Things I hadn't even thought about.
Really?
Hey, look at this. Look at that. Here, this applies. Look at that. And of course, when the story's all over, well, of course, on the way up, you know, it's very important. On the way up the mountain, Isaac is saying, hey, Dad, you know, where's the sacrifice?
Yeah.
We got fire, we got wood, but we're missing something.
Yeah.
God will provide the sacrifice, my son.
Mm-hmm.
So they went on up. I'd love to have heard the conversation here with Abraham and Isaac, you know, before he put them on the altar. But when it was all over, Abraham named the place, the Lord will provide. He said, in the mountain of the Lord, it'll be provided. And that mountain was Mount Moriah, where Solomon built the temple. It was really where Jesus was sacrificed. I mean, all the events of the last 24 hours of his life were within half a mile of that mountain, and they were all on all different sides of it. It was clear he was wanting Abraham to go through all the steps. And we noticed even, it says on the third day they got to the mountain.
There you go.
And these guys are right with me. Oh yeah, the third day, that's when Jesus was raised from the dead. And the third day was really when Abraham got his son back. The Hebrew writer, of course, says, you know, in a figure, he was raised from the dead, and Abraham thought he believed he could be raised.
Right.
And oh, after that, Carey was so excited about studying Genesis. This is where he wanted to be. This is great. It was just wonderful. Well, of course, by that time, a lot of weeks had gone by, and I didn't really know what all was going on with Carey and some of the others. Sewell Hall wrote an article in his paper sometime after this called The Light at the Front of the Bus.
Yes.
And because you know, these guys would all be at the back of the bus playing poker. And Jay would be up there with one light. There's one light on at the front of the bus. He's reading his Bible.
Yeah.
And so some of these guys, I think Kerry was one of the ones, they'd go up there after a while. They'd sit down next to him and start asking him questions. And I mean, they were really learning. And so by the end of the summer, there were several of those guys who really, in truth, they had been converted. And I don't know that it was by me so much as by Jay. He was the one that was living it out for them.
Yeah.
Because he encouraged me to try to get a study with the team the following year, when there was no members of the church on the team at all. But there was a denominational group that was meeting, and they let me start teaching, but it didn't go anywhere. I didn't have Jay Pettibone.
The difference is that he wasn't there. Yeah.
He was the one making the difference.
Yeah.
Toward the end of that summer, Jay, I learned later from Kerry a very interesting story. I was surprised he didn't put it on his, and when he told you about it. So I've got to put it in for him.
Okay.
He was getting much more serious about God. Still, he was going to the Catholic Church, maybe going more than he was before. Mm-hmm. So he was going to go to a special event. There was some real high up in the Catholic Church. I don't remember if he was an archbishop or a cardinal, but he was very high up, mm-hmm. and he was going to give a talk. And so Kerry was so excited. I mean, he'd been studying the Bible all summer, and here's a guy that way high up in the church, you know, wow, what might he learn from this guy?
Right.
So he went to this, and the guy got up there and he started talking about some of the presidents of the United States that he'd met. He talked about some of the other famous people he met. He kept going on one story after another. And Kerry said, after a while, I wanted to get up and stand up and says, hey, how about Jesus? Did you ever meet him?
Oh, man.
And I think Kerry discovered for the first time he wasn't the same person he had been at the beginning of that summer.
Yes.
He couldn't go back.
Yeah. It just doesn't resonate anymore because you've heard something better. That's amazing. We have a member of our congregation who went back and worshiped with his family in a Baptist group. And he said the guy talked for 30 minutes about biscuits and how you make the perfect biscuit. And he just is ready to walk out. Like, what has that got to do with anything? Why are we talking about that here? You know, let's get it back to the Lord.
Yeah, it was great. And I don't know how long it was after that he was baptized, but there was one of our classes that some of the guys said they wanted to get baptized. And I think a couple others joined in. We baptized four people. Now, two of them didn't stick.
Well, and that's pretty typical, isn't it? That you get some that just don't.
Yeah,
stay.
I tried to follow up that one of them was living in the Dallas area. So I contacted a preacher there in Dallas, but I never heard back from the preacher even. I was disappointed. But there was Kerry and who was the other guy? Jim Schaefer was the other guy that was baptized.
Okay.
It was very interesting. I didn't hear much from Jim for 20 some years. He was in the Missouri. He was in Missouri. Many years later, my youngest son, after he had finished a couple of years at Florida College, he was in Bowling Green, Kentucky, going to a little church. One guy who was going to church with him, another student the same age, was Jim Schaefer's son.
Oh.
And my you know, the two young men had no idea there was any connection with their dads.
Yeah.
But I got connected back up with Jim after that.
Did you? That's pretty great. What a way to reconnect through their children.
It was very nice. Yeah.
Have you stayed connected with Jay Pettibone?
I did see him again. After I moved to Maine, he had moved up a notch in, I think he was in AAA, which is the highest minor league. And he was playing somewhere on the East Coast. And I think it was in Portland, Maine, where he was playing, which is just an hour and a half south of Bangor. And I was going to Boston, taking one of my sons to the doctor in Boston, and we stopped and had lunch with him. And I talked with him about how things were going. And he told me, he said, well, he said, he's not getting the opportunities to teach people this year as he did before. He said, you get up into AAA and everyone gets a big head. They think they're really something and they don't want the gospel. No, I haven't heard from Jay in many years.
Well, you said that the Asheville work was the last full-time work that you had?
Yes.
What did you go on to do after that?
Well, some doctrinal issues came up and I needed to leave.
Really?
Yeah. So again, that wouldn't be something you'd want to put on your particular podcast.
All right. Well, that's fine. Sure.
I mean, if you're interested, I've actually since then wrote some articles about these matters, and I'd be happy to email you one if you'd like.
I'd be glad to have that. And I'd also like to have the thing that John Witt taught you, or at least maybe you've even improved it since you used it, the way to bring folks to the Lord. Because, you know, Carrie talked about that and really was thankful for the way you did. And he said one thing, too, I want to check with you. He said that he remembers your style of teaching was they'd ask a question. And you would say, well, Carrie, I think if you turn over to, and I think, you know, it was about meat or something. And you said, if you turn to 1 Timothy 4 and read there, I think you'll find your answer. Is that a way you purpose to teach?
You know, when I heard him say that, I was a little bit surprised. I'm sure he told the truth. I don't remember doing that consciously.
You don't remember it. Okay.
No.
Well, it's funny what different folks remember about, you know, and this, we're talking years ago.
Oh, yes, we definitely are. Almost 35 years.
Yeah.
It was way back. Well. You know, I mean, I wasn't even 30 years old at the time, and now I'm 70. So, wait a minute. I wasn't even 30 now. That's over 40 years.
Yeah. Isn't that something?
Yeah, that's a long time.
Wow. It's true. I just turned 64, so I'm not that far behind you. But as a young man, first of all, I got to ask, how tall are you?
I used to be about half inch short of 6 feet.
Okay.
So I dropped a little bit. As you get older, you drop a little bit, but I'm probably close to 5'11 now.
But these guys that you were teaching, were they pretty big guys? I mean, Carrie's a big guy.
Well, Carrie was the tallest one there.
Yeah.
I mean, they were all reasonably big. I mean, they're all athletic.
Yeah.
I mean, it was interesting because I'm not an athletic person. And I mean, I knew baseball because I'd watched on TV with my dad growing up, and I'd played a little bit, you know, as a kid, but I never was any good at it. So, you know, I'd meet with them and we'd chat a little bit before we'd start the study. And I'd always be interested in what they were doing as baseball players and learning, you know, some of the strategies and all that. They would tell me things I just didn't know about baseball.
Yeah.
It was obviously more than what I had known just, you know, playing as a little kid but there was a lot more to it. When you get up to that level, you have to really be able to think on your feet. And it was just interesting to me to listen to what they had to say. And
yeah, it is interesting to listen to.
But it was one of those things where, you know, I probably wouldn't have gone to the library and got a book on it, but, you know, I cared about these guys, and if they like it, I want to know about it. And so, you know, we talk about that.
Well, he mentioned just another thing in passing. He said, you know, he said you were like the smallest guy in the room, or I guess the least athletic guy in the room, but you're the one everybody's listening to because you're the one that's able to teach them about the word that they were all interested in. And I thought that was an interesting dynamic.
Well, yeah, I weighed 125 pounds back then.
Really?
So, yeah, almost 6 feet, 105 pounds. So there wasn't a whole lot of muscle on my body.
Were you raised in South Africa?
We were I went into the 10th grade when we moved to South Africa. I was 15 years old.
Okay. So you were baptized here in the States.
Yes, and before then, we went over there. Yes.
I guess rebaptized over there then.
Well, no, I was at Florida College when I was 18.
Okay. All right.
So that's when I got rebaptized.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. The South Africa experience, I'm sure it was good for me. In fact, my dad started a church in Johannesburg. I think he had two Christians to start with to join us. They were already Christians. And then he just kind of worked it up from there. Sometime fairly early on, they assigned me to teach the children's class, which was only my brothers. I was teaching my brothers in the class.
Okay.
I learned a little bit about reading some of the books in my dad's library, trying to prepare for these classes. I don't know that they got the best teaching possible, but there weren't a lot of choices.
Well, yeah.
The church that small.
Yeah, you have to step up. Some of the things we have to do in a small congregation, folks that wouldn't normally teach are kind of called upon, and there's nothing that gets you to prepare like having to present a lesson.
I've learned much more by teaching than I've ever learned any other way.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, I guess you've kind of said that the experience that you had or the fruit that came was very much dependent on the hearts of the guys, Jay and Carrie, their hearts.
Right.
I mean, isn't it the joy of a teacher to find a student like that just really wants to get the word?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It's just, it was such an exciting time. Just such an exciting time.
Have you kept in contact with Carrie at all?
Well, not a lot. I've seen him a few times. In fact, he arranged for me to preach a meeting where his mother got baptized in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh.
And he was going there at the time.
Okay.
And so that wasn't too long after he'd become a Christian.
Uh-huh.
And it was kind of interesting. I can still remember this. He was going to lead singing, I think, for the very first time ever in the meeting.
Okay.
I was preaching the meeting. So he wanted to know, well, Ken, you know, when I do the leading, am I supposed to like be a little bit ahead of everyone else, you know? And I said, no, you want to be right on the exact beat. But, you know, but I was thinking to myself afterwards, you know, well, from the standpoint of a pitcher playing baseball, being ahead is probably the best way to be.
Right. Yeah. That's interesting.
I'm sure he was thinking of the term lead. And if I'm going to lead, I got to be ahead of them.
Yeah. Right. Oh, isn't that interesting?
And then some years later, I saw him down at Florida College. I don't remember whether we had gone down there for one of my brothers or if this is one of my sons that was down there. But so, you know, off and on, I've run into him. We've had times to visit. And I was really excited when, you know, after the Soviet Union broke up and he went over there and did some preaching in Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
Just wonderful.
Really was. And along with Rich Leggett, I helped him drive up to Toronto when he taught in Toronto for a couple of years, moved up there and was located there, and then came back to the Florida area. And now he's been with the Temple Terrace congregation for, I don't know, 15 years, something like that. And he's a full time with them, but he doesn't spend a lot of time in the pulpit. He's their personal work guy. And he's not only doing the teaching, but he's teaching folks how to teach. And when I think of that and you, I think of the thing that Robert Schuller said years ago. He said, anybody can know how many seeds are in an apple, but only God knows how many apples are in a seed, you know. And you know, here's this fella that, and I don't know, I was thinking about that conversion that maybe if you assigned probabilities, you wouldn't have thought, you know, the baseball team would have been the best candidates. But here are a couple of guys with good hearts, and look where it's gone.
Wow. Yeah, that is tremendous.
Yeah. And you had
it. It was a great privilege to be part of it. It really was nice.
Do you have anything to say to an 11-year-old who is thinking that it's time to be baptized? I mean, anything from your experience that, you know, go ahead or wait or just not even?
No, I certainly wouldn't say that a person that's 11 is not ready. I felt like I should get baptized 11 because my dad had said he'd been baptized at 11.
Okay.
I just thought that's when you should do it. And
okay.
You know, thinking about it later, I wasn't so sure that was the best reason to get baptized.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You know what I do, and it doesn't happen very much, but if somebody is on the younger side now and they ask to be baptized, I go ahead and baptize them, but I give them a piece of paper, and typed on the piece of paper, it says, I was baptized today because, and I don't put anything else down there, but I invite them to fill that out and then just tuck it away somewhere so that if later on, doubt, they can go back and they can at least see in their own words what they were thinking that day
That's really a good idea, very good idea. And I think someone may have recommended that to me at the time and I didn't do it. So when I was 18, I did. I still have the paper from when I was 18. And I could go back and find out if I wanted to, but I don't have any doubt on that one.
Well, right. Then, and there certainly is no downside to making sure and to going back and doing again if there's any doubt at all.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes perfect sense.
In the congregation of Bangor, there has not been the mindset of having children baptized young. Our boys were all, I think, 16 years old or older before they were baptized.
So you're saying there's no congregational expectation and there's no pressure on
right.
a young person.
They're in the 35 years I've been here, I don't think we've ever baptized anyone as young as 11. In fact, maybe 15 would be the youngest that we've ever baptized anyone. So without that pressure, it just seems like with our boys and our granddaughter as well, just the natural age was later than 11. It was more into the mid to late teens.
What does that look like? I guess I don't know how to say it exactly, but what do you evaluate to say that the congregation doesn't have an expectation? Let me state it another way. Sometimes in a teen class, a teacher will start pressuring people. You make sure you don't do that?
We never have had anyone do that, but
yeah,
it wasn't something I was conscious about.
Okay.
The pressure you usually see in a church is just a number of young people get baptized at a certain age, and then everyone else thinks they need to do that too.
Okay, right.
And
an example yeah. of somebody doing that. Okay.
Right.
So it maybe wasn't a particularly conscious thing, but just didn't communally develop that expectation for a young person to obey.
Well, one of our members, he's dead now, but he was a leading member. His view was you need to be old enough to get married before you get baptized, which I don't know that anyone agreed with him. But in the Bible, some people, I think, got married awfully young.
Well, yeah, we do think, 12, 13, something
yes,
like that.
Yes,
yeah. Did you support yourself with secular work after you went
yes.
to Maine?
Yes, before I started in preaching, I had done a little bit of computer programming.
Okay.
And so when we moved to Bangor, I just started pounding on doors and found a place that would hire me to do computer programming. The Lord was really with us. It's not something that I recommend people doing very often. I've only done it a couple times, but when we moved to Bangor, it was very obvious within just a few weeks, there were no jobs available.
Really?
And I needed to know, should I stay in Bangor? Should I go somewhere else? The other place to go would have been Portland, Maine.
This was the early 80s?
Yes,
okay.
81, 82, something like that.
Okay.
It was a recession at the time.
Right.
And so for one of the few times in my life, I asked for a sign from the Lord, kind of like what Abraham's servant did there when he was trying to pick out a wife for Isaac.
Uh-huh.
I'd had a talk with a guy that said, I'm interested in having you do a contract job for me, just, you know, a few weeks of work. And so my wife and I went to the Lord in prayer. We said, Lord, if you want us to stay in Bangor, tell us we've got this job, this contract job. It wasn't enough to live on, but it would be a sign. And if not, then, you know, we'll go somewhere else.
Okay.
So, and the guy had told me he was going to tell me in a couple of weeks. So we waited a couple of weeks, and then he said, well, I don't know yet. I've got to wait on my customer to come back to me.
Uh-huh.
We went weeks and weeks, and we were getting pretty desperate. I mean,
yeah,
there were some times I think if the landlady had asked for the rent a week early, we wouldn't have had the money and wouldn't have known where it was going to come.
Yeah.
But she never knew how close it was. She got paid on time every month.
Isn't that something?
But the Lord was providing in some very unusual ways. I mean, just all different ways. But we were getting pretty desperate. And so we were saying to each other, well, we can't move. We told the Lord we're waiting on his sign.
Yeah.
He hasn't given us a sign yet.
Right.
So we prayed again. And the same guy that had offered me the contract work called and offered me a different contract job. He had just gotten his first customer in Toronto, Canada, interesting enough. But anyway, he gave me this contract job for 2 weeks. So, and we were, wow. I mean, when he paid me at the end of those 2 weeks, that money went in the bank in a hurry. We had
bills. Man.
But he never did mention stopping the job. And I kept working for him until eventually he sold his company to a company in the Virginia area, right where you're living. It was,
oh, wow.
The company name was Autometric, but you probably have not heard of them.
Right.
They then got bought by Boeing.
Okay.
And I was working for Boeing until I retired last June.
Oh, wow.
So, and the same job I got when I first moved to Bangor.
No.
Yeah. It's just the company got bought by another company, and that one was bought by another company. So I was still a programmer working with the very same people I worked at 35 years ago.
And you didn't have to move anywhere.
Didn't have to move. No.
Isn't that's yeah. wild. So,
the Lord provided. I mean, I eventually got that contract job. We'd asked the Lord as a sign, but I didn't get it until after I actually had the other job. So we've never needed to move. You know, he really came through. I mean, he's taking care of us.
I love that. The way that worked out, that is so interesting. So you were able to support yourself and then do the preaching most of the time, or are you,
it has not been full time. Our full time preacher right now is Tim Reeves.
Okay.
You probably know some of his brothers, maybe, or his dad was Bill Reeves, who died just a couple of years ago.
I've heard of that family, yes.
Yeah. So Tim and his wife are here. And Tim and I are elders in the church now.
Wonderful.
Yeah. First time the church has elders since I moved here, in fact. I did a lot of preaching over the years because we didn't always have a preacher.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of teaching as well. And we went through some really difficult times. I was very thankful that I was able to be a member and maybe not the preacher at that time. Of course.
Do you ever get back to South Africa?
I've been back one time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I came back to this country in 1972, but 20 years ago, which that would have been
2002.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was 50 years old.
Uh-huh.
And I went over to visit my parents. Had my wife and my youngest son with me. And we had just a wonderful time. Just, it was so interesting. I mean, the country had changed so much since I was there.
And the reason I do this is to both inspire people to obey the gospel, But, and I think this program that you just, this story that you just gave might do the second part, serve the second purpose better. And that is to inspire people to teach, to teach others, yeah. You know, help them, help others come to Christ. Because, you know, there's a big guy that I think a lot of, that thanks a lot of you for helping him.
Yeah. It was just a huge privilege for me. That's just what it was. Just
yeah.
Huge privilege. And I'm sure you know that too, you know, just to get to teach someone. Wow. I mean, there's nothing better than that.
They say the only thing you could take out of this world is the people you've taught. That's a pretty great blessing. Well, God bless you, Kent. Thanks so much for your time today.
I've enjoyed talking with you, Jeff. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks so much. Okay. God bless.
God bless you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I'm glad you joined us for this episode of Conversions to Christ. If you have comments or questions, we'd love to hear them. Please send them to me at teachpreach@gmail.com. Come back and join us again.